that you find in each local geological column. Within a formation, the sorting action of moving water is very, very efficient. This can be shown both in the laboratory and by mathematics. And so within a formation, the order tends to be from the more simple, less differentiated on the bottom, to the more complex, differentiated, more mobile, and also less streamlined near the top of the formation. The order of mobility has a little bearing, but the major factor delineating the differences, I would say, is one of ecological zonation. And there we find exactly what we would generally expect to find in a worldwide flood.
Could you put on the second carousel? Sorry about this. Slide 11. Dr. Morris makes the point that what we see in the ground could be the result of ecological zonation. That occurred to the geologists of 200 years ago, and it was rejected 200 years ago. There's a very simple reason why. Can I have slide 11? Here are three organisms, or here will be three organisms, which clearly share common ecological zones. They swim in the ocean. They're about the same size. They're all vertebrates. They're all excellent swimmers. Where they exist, the two that are around today, they certainly exist side by side. We have ichthyosaur, a kind of ichthyosaur, a reptile that had gone back into the sea. In the middle, we have a shark. In the bottom, we have a porpoise. Now, the shark appears first, actually, because we see this sort of animal before we see any reptiles, then the ichthyosaur, then the porpoise. They share identical ecological zones. We don't see them in the same place in the stratum. We see them hundreds of millions of years apart. The idea of ecological zonation is not true. It's discredited. It's wrong.
A final question for Dr. Miller. Evolution states that life began through the formation of amino acids from a soup of chemicals. How then, in your opinion, did mere chemicals, which even man may be reduced to, acquire the property known as life? Furthermore, you spoke of a self-replicating molecular RNA, but does that mean that life exists? And if so, what is death?
I like the question. I used to teach at another university north of here, which will remain unnamed and is a member of our athletic conference. And one of my colleagues there was a gentleman named George Wald, who's a very, very famous biochemist and won the Nobel Prize for the physiology of vision. And I respond to the last three words in the question, what is death? George Wald had a famous lecture. He was a very famous man. Nobel laureate, still is a famous man, still around, I shouldn't say it. He's a Nobel laureate, but he insisted on charging in and teaching the large introductory biology course every year. And the highlight of George's lectures, and it would draw 1,000 people, there are only 500 in the class, 1,000 would come charging in. It's his final lecture, and the lecture was called Sex is Death. And my answer to the question is sex is death, and death is sex. And the reason for that, this doesn't have anything to do with evolutionary debate, is that if you divide into a copy of yourselves, the way a bacterium does, you're immortal, because in a sense you can't tell which one you were if you keep splitting. So the identity of an individual becomes merged in that kind of distinction. But when an organism develops a sexual mechanism makes the parent distinct from the offspring. And therefore, the parent has a finite lifetime, the parent dies. And that is the reason why sex implies the death of the individual. So death is sex. The next part of the question was, how did life evolve from these simple organisms? And I believe something to the effect is self-replicating RNA alive. Well, that's a semantic question in terms of what is a virus alive? Is E. coli alive? Is self-replicating RNA alive? If I take a DNA molecule, which we can derive from a certain source, and put it in a test tube, throw the right stuff in, it'll make a virus. The virus can then infect a cell, and it kind of lives when it's in the cell, and so forth and so on. There are semantic problems in this. You tell me what you mean by life, and I'll tell you whether or not it's alive. Now, I may have my own definitions, and the fact of the matter is that a self-replicating molecule does not fit my own definitions. How did life evolve? Nobody knows how life evolved. That's absolutely true. But the question is, can we say with certainty that life could not have evolved from non-living chemicals? And the answer is, as far as we can tell from trying to test things in the laboratory and seeing if there's an insurmountable barrier, is, as far as we can tell, no. Now, you should be aware of something, though, and that is that there is a very, very serious subgroup in science who says they don't believe that life evolved on Earth, and perhaps life originated somewhere else and got here on a meteorite or a spaceship or something like that. And many very serious scientists believe that. Now, there are ways to poke fun at that suggestion. The fact of the matter is, it would be entirely consistent with what we do observe in the fossil record, and there's really no way to decide it. But the question that really matters to science is, can we exclude the possibility that it could have evolved? And the answer to that question, very simply, is no. I think this may be my last opportunity to speak. I want to thank Dr. Morris immensely for this evening. It's a great honor to have shared the stage with him. I have enjoyed it, and I've profited by the experience, and I hope all of us have left here with a clearer understanding of what these two models mean and what they correspond to in the basis of fact. Thanks.
I don't think I need to respond any further to the particular question, but I also wanted the opportunity to thank Dr. Miller. I've been in a number of these debates, not nearly as many as my colleague Dr. Gish, but enough of them to get a fair sampling, and I'll have to say that Dr. Miller has been just about the best, so he has really had a tremendous array of data and information. I would just urge you to do what he has indicated also, and that is to continue to look at both models, whatever sets of data you may encounter in the classroom, continue to test everything by the two models. Get the literature in creation as well as evolution and study it out for yourself. I believe that all the questions he has raised have good answers if we had the time to develop them. He probably would say the same thing about mine. At any rate, it's still a question that's unsettled and deserves a full exposure and consideration. No longer the indoctrination in one system only, which has been the experience of the past. I appreciate your coming tonight. I appreciate Dr. Miller, Dr. Rohr, and all those that have had a part in this. It's been good to visit with you for this brief period. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, the sponsors have asked me to make the following announcements. Your donations for the further support cheerfully received as at the